You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, follow us wherever you get your podcast. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. And the New York Mets are in first place in the National League East. All it took was one sweep of a doubleheader, and suddenly this team is atop the division. Despite all of the ups and downs of the season, Mets fans complaining that this team was terrible. Give it some time. One good day, still a long way to go, but it's good to see the Mets get back on track. On today's show, in the first segment, I want to talk about game one of the doubleheader. In the second segment, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the walk-off hit that ended that doubleheader, and I want to issue an apology to the guy who got that hit, Jonathan VR, who you know I've been very critical of this season. So for those of you who are on the VR bandwagon, make sure you stick around for that. And then in the final segment, I will talk about the second game of this doubleheader and the fact that the Mets are, again, now in first place in this division. But before we get to any of that, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at MetsMorizeOnline.com. Also, I want to note, as you guys are listening to this later on tonight, on Wednesday, I'm going to do a locker room. So make sure you download the locker room app for your iOS devices. I will be opening up that room right around game time at 7 o'clock. So you can come in, ask me some questions, and watch some of the Mets game with me later on tonight. So let's talk about game one on Tuesday. Dominic Smith hits a home run in the bottom of the first inning. That was his second home run of the season. Both of them have come off Chase Anderson. And in both games, that's all Chase Anderson has given up. The Mets have not been able to really get to Anderson, even though he is not the best of starting pitchers. But for the Mets at the time, when they get a two-run lead in the first inning, you think maybe the floodgates are going to open. Maybe this is the day that all the runs are going to score, the Mets are going to breeze through a doubleheader, and it just didn't work out like that. Taijuan Walker held up his end of the bargain. You know, he gave up a leadoff double in the top of the second inning to Alec Bohm, gave up a single and ultimately a sac fly that scored him. But besides that, he was pretty solid throughout. He had 8 strikeouts, really was locating that split change. I kind of had this weird comparison in my head when watching him throw that pitch and a lot of his pitches down in the zone. I don't know how many of you play MLB The Show, but at times when you're pitching in that game, there's obviously one of those meters that you have to hit. And there's a little line where you have that perfect pitch. And to me, it seemed like early in this game, Walker was hitting that line, so to speak, where his ball had that perfect sink on it, especially that split change, the sinker, everything at the bottom of the zone where he's starting these pitches at the batter's knees and it just drops out of the zone enough so that the only thing a batter can do is hit the ball into the ground basically. So between his location of those pitches, the way he can really go up in the zone, work each side of the plate, I have been blown away so far watching Taijuan Walker pitch. I did not expect this level of production. The velocity has been a shock. I mean, he touched 97 again in this game, was averaging 95 on his fastball. This is a guy that in the past has sometimes sat closer to 92 miles per hour. So that's a big difference. And you're seeing with the stuff playing up, with the movement, with the control, this is a pretty strong starter for the Mets. And when you think about the fact that Carlos Carrasco is apparently throwing 4 innings of a sin game already, going to go to the alternate site, pitch a 5-inning game at that point, still needs to run full speed, but is fielding his position. He's going to be back sooner than we thought. Syndergaard going to be back in June. This has the potential to be a truly dynamic rotation. And when other guys like Peterson, Lucchesi can end up factoring into a bullpen as well, maybe. You're just talking about a really complete overall staff in general. So I'm really excited with what I've seen when it comes to that so far. And Walker's day ended a bit early because Joe West kind of squeezed him in the fifth inning. He walked a few batters after striking out the leadoff man. So with one out, the Mets went to Miguel Castro, and he did a good job. He struck out Andrew McCutchen. They then get the final out of that inning where Roman Quinn gets picked off at third trying to steal. He ends up coming off the base thinking that a high throw was going to go in the outfield. Guillorme makes an athletic leaping catch, and it looked like he kind of tackled Quinn, but really Quinn started moving and kind of upended Guillorme, and basically Quinn himself kind of fell off the bag. It was an easy out to end that inning. In the following frame, Castro did not fare as well as he gave up a run, although I don't really fault him for it. Ultimately, he comes in on an infield single where Gene Segura hits a nubber to third, and Guillorme just couldn't get in time and field it. Probably should have gone with the bare hand. Was unable to make a tough play, and that's how the game gets tied. Edwin Diaz pitches a clean seventh inning. The Mets have an opportunity in the bottom of the seventh to score a run with two runners on first and second and nobody out, unable to do anything, and you get into extra innings. And from there, this game really kind of got crazy. I want to spend a little bit extra time just talking about that inning, talking about a good managerial decision by Luis Rojas, talk about Jonathan Villar getting the clutch hit, issue my apology. So we're going to get to all of that in just a minute. Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar ever, with 18 amazing flavors, including the caramel brownie bar, cookies and cream, cherry barcia, lemon almond cheesecake, carrot cake, and the apple almond crisp, amongst others. These really are protein bars that taste like candy bars. Built Bars come covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, and they're healthy. They come low in calorie, low in sugar, high in protein, and high in fiber. If you want to try Built Bar today, go to BuiltBar.com and use the promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off your next order. That's promo code LOCK15 to get 15% off at BuiltBar.com. Get more of the sports news you need in less time with our new Locked On Today podcast. Hosted by Peter Bukowski, Locked On Today is a daily show breaking down the biggest stories with analysis from our local experts. Start your day with all the sports news you need in under 20 minutes by subscribing to Locked On Today wherever you get your podcasts. So this extra inning was really fascinating for the Mets and kind of a turning point of the young season for them, because it just did not feel like they were going to win this game. It felt like that panic was still kind of infecting the team. They couldn't get the big hit in that bottom of the seventh where they had a clear opportunity to win the game. And you just thought something was going to go wrong, especially when the Mets give up a run in the top of the eighth. And I will say, it is ridiculous. We're starting with a runner on second base in the eighth inning of a game. I know it's the extra inning rule, but when we're playing these, you know, seven inning doubleheaders, why can't you just play two normal innings and then get into this new rule? Regardless, the Phillies get the runner that starts off on second. They score him on basically another infield single. How this one happens is you had first and second with Trevor May on the mound. You had two outs, and there is kind of a lazy attempt at catching a ball by James McCann. He just doesn't get down on a pitch, and he turns his glove over the wrong way. It hits the heel of his glove, bounces away. That takes runners from first and second to second and third. And then, because the Mets are shifting on Didi Gregorius, he hits a ball to the right of Francisco Lindor that it takes him a second to get to. And with Gregorius running down the line, he simply does not have a play at first base. A run comes around to score. Had that pass ball not happened, Lindor would have had some options for force outs. Probably gets out of that inning without giving up a run. But the Mets then enter the bottom of the eighth inning, down a run. And I think everyone was thinking, all right, same old Mets, they're going to lose this game. But that's not what happened. And one of the things that plays into the Mets winning this game is a very smart move by Luis Rojas. At the end of the seventh, Dominic Smith made the last out. Now, apparently there's a rule that is attached to the extra inning rule that a pitcher cannot be the runner that starts on second base. So since Kevin Pillar had pinch hit earlier in that seventh inning, the Mets pulled a double switch to keep him in for defense, which then moved the pitcher spot into Dominic Smith's place in the order, having made the last out. What that does is because the pitcher cannot go out and run, it is the batter who was previously in the lineup ahead of them that ends up on second base. So in this case, that was Francisco Lindor, which gave the Mets probably their best base runner out there, I would think, or at least one of the best. He ends up scoring on a base hit by Pete Alonso. It was a line drive that freezed Lindor, as a good base runner does, knowing that Gregorius could have made a catch on the play. He doesn't. The ball gets through. Lindor might have been the only player on the team that comes around and scores there outside of, I don't know, Jonathan VR, maybe a Brandon Nimmo, depending on if he gets a good jump. So that was a really smart move by Rojas. And from there, after the Mets had tied the game, Jeff McNeil grounds into a force out, beats the throw at first base to prevent a double play. I got to say, Didi Gregorius continues to prove to be a very bad shortstop defensively. He left a lot of outs on the table when it came to turning double plays in this game, and that was a pretty big one for the Mets. Michael Conforto drew a four-pitch walk from there. James McCann then hit one up the middle, a hard grounder that Gregorius almost made a diving stop on, but it trickled out of his glove for an infield hit. That loaded the bases for Jonathan VR. And I gotta say, this was a weird scenario for me. It was a win-win. Because either the Mets were going to win, and Jonathan VR was going to come through, or he was going to screw up, and I would be right for my criticism of Jonathan VR. So I'm sitting there hoping the Mets win, but knowing in the back of my mind, if he doesn't come through, got a little more ammunition. Well, guess what? VR had a great at-bat. Got to give the guy credit. Falls behind 1-2, spits on a few bad pitches, ends up in a full count, gets a pitch to hit, drives it over Andrew McCutchen's head in left field, walks the game off. The Mets get a huge victory. And then after starting the second game, he comes through with an RBI double and scores a run. So a big day for VR, and this is the time that some of you have been anxiously waiting for, where I apologize to Jonathan VR, the same guy who had two terrible throws in the second game of the doubleheader that Jeff McNeil and Pete Alonso had to make great plays to save him from. The guy's been worth minus 44 outs above average in his career. I want to apologize to the guy that went 0-7 after I criticized him last week for piling up stats in a blowout game with five strikeouts in those next seven at-bats in the following two games that he played. I want to apologize to Jonathan VR, who has struck out in 8 of his 18 at-bats this year, which leads the team for the worst strikeout rate at 44%. I'm really sorry, VR, for the things that I've said, and I promise to do better. In all honesty, this is not the point to be criticizing and nitpicking when he comes through and when he doesn't. My entire point is I didn't want to see Jonathan VR taking playing time away from Luis Guillorme or even J.D. Davis, and I still stand by that. Guillorme is 4-7 this year with 4 walks. He's gotten on base at a .727 clip, and I promise you, even though he's made some shaky plays so far at third, he needs time to adjust to the position. He is going to be a plus defender at third. VR is not. So overall, I see Guillorme as a net positive player, and VR is an extremely talented player that might even bring more to the Mets off the bench because he can pitch run, because he does have some pop in his bat, and he swings from both sides. So I think that all of this is to just see the Mets getting the most out of the players that they have. And overall, my point has been that VR shouldn't be a starter and shouldn't take away playing time from those other options. He's still an extremely talented player that absolutely raises the ceiling of this team. My concerns have always just been over whether he would buy into a limited role or if he would get agitated if he wasn't getting a ton of playing time. And that's something that we can't see yet. And I just believe that a player like Guillorme helps you win more on a day-to-day basis than Jonathan VR. And we'll see if that proves to be true throughout the season. If it doesn't, if VR ends up going on a tear, having an unbelievable season, wins the third base job to play every day, hits 25 home runs, steals 25 bases, and is a huge part of the Mets winning, I am more than happy to admit that I'm wrong, and I will be thrilled that he helps the Mets win ball games. Just like I was thrilled when he got that hit to win the first game of the doubleheader, and then he got a double that scored a run in the second game. So that is my overall take on Jonathan VR. That's the full scope of it. And if you want to come at me on Twitter, whenever he gets a hit, I will more than happily play along to the role like a good heel in wrestling. And I'll play it up and I'll be the clown. I don't care. As long as the Mets are winning, I'm happy. And in this instance, VR had a great day. We'll see if he keeps it up. I hope he does. In just a minute, I want to talk about the rest of Game 2 of that doubleheader, as the Mets seem to have probably their most complete game of the season. And also, I want to talk about the fact that they are somehow in first place after everything that has gone on so far. We'll get to all of that. But if you're going to bet on sports, the fastest and easiest way to get into all the action is BetOnline. They have the NBA, the NHL, and Major League Baseball in full swing right now. BetOnline even covers awards, TV shows, and reality TV with real-time outdated odds and props on almost anything you can imagine. BetOnline has you covered for all the new scores and odds. It's the best way to place your bets, and it's free to sign up. So head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit with our promo code LOCKEDON. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. After winning Game 1 in thrilling walk-off fashion, the Mets rode a bunch of momentum into that second game, and it really felt like the first completely stress-free game of the season, outside of maybe a little bit of butterflies in your stomach when Jeurys Familia was on the mound in that seventh inning with a couple runners on base. But overall, it seemed like the Mets were in complete control of that game. Marcus Stroman breezed through his six innings, allowed four hits, no walks, and three strikeouts. He was actually perfect the first time through the order, ending each frame with a swinging strikeout, because that is what this guy does right now. The movement on all of his pitches is just ridiculous. I mean, he has been in that lab for a year, just adding to his bag of tricks, and it's awesome to watch him pitch each and every start. I'll remind you, I've said that he's going to lead this team in wins this year, and that he is going to be an all-star. And I believe both of those things are on pace to happen right now. So I look at what Stroman has done. It's been really impressive. And I think the best part about what Stroman brings to the table is that he keeps his team engaged behind him. That's why I said he's going to lead this team in wins, because I think guys feed off his energy. And Brandon Nimmo said it. He's out in center field. He could see that Stroman was locked in. He could feel that energy uptick. And everything kind of flows from there. I think the perfect example of that is in the fourth inning, top of the frame, Stroman's on the mound, gets an inning-ending double play where Francisco Lindor fields the ball, turns it himself. He runs off the field. He's hugging Lindor. Everyone's pumped up. What happens? That next inning, the Mets string together four hits and a hit by pitch. They score three runs. Brandon Nimmo, big part of that, got an RBI hit there. Also got an RBI hit later on in the game in the sixth inning, driving in Tomas Nito, who tripled. Yeah, Nito tripled. If you guys missed that, a ball that went into the right field corner. Harper had to dig it out from under the fence. Gave Nito time to get around the bases there. But all of that comes together. It starts with Stroman, and it trickles down to the rest of the team. Brandon Nimmo, who mentioned Stroman's energy, went 3-for-4 in that game, had three RBIs. He also drew two walks and scored a run in the first game. He has probably been the most valuable player in the Mets so far this year. What Nimmo has done as a leadoff hitter has been exceptional. Hopefully he keeps that up when the rest of the lineup gets hot around him. And he's going to score a ton of runs for this team. Now, after Stroman pitched six innings, in the bottom of the sixth, he draws a walk, is on the bases a little bit too long. Ultimately, the legs started to stiffen up a bit. So the Mets had to pull him with a 4-0 lead going into that final inning. Jeurys Familia comes in. Like I said, gives up a few base runners, but ultimately pitches a scoreless inning and preserves the shutout. And the Mets end up sweeping the doubleheader. The biggest stat for me is that the Mets, from the eighth inning of Game 1 on, got five hits with runners in scoring position. which is clearly an improvement upon some of these games where they're not getting any hits or they're getting one or two hits when there are runners in scoring position. This is the running theme with the Mets. Can they figure out a way to drive in all that traffic they get on the bases as their individual players don't seem to have too many problems dating back to last year getting hits and drawing walks? The issue has just been scoring runs. And while the Mets only scored eight runs, it's still a good start. And now they have to face Zach Wheeler, which is going to be a big test. But if they can get through that and Zach Eflin, they're going to go to Colorado. They're going to go to Chicago. This should be a time where the offense gets things going because they're going to be playing in some bandboxes where they can really see the ball fly out of the ballpark. Also, one thing that I think we forget every single year is pitching always dominates the first month of the season because you're playing in cold-ass weather. And it's easier when you're a pitcher involved in every single play, going into the dugout, putting on a heavy jacket to make it through those conditions than players who at times are standing out at their positions, basically getting frozen while they're watching their flamethrower strike out the side. Then they have to go in, grab a cold bat, and perform against 97 miles per hour. It's hard to hit in these colder months. When it really gets into the summer, things warm up a bit. It seems like offenses get hot as well. So we'll see if that holds true this year. But this was a good first step to the Mets figuring things out and starting to produce some more runs for their pitching staff, which altogether has been good so far. I think the bullpen is starting to figure some things out. I like what Miguel Castro is doing, Trevor May, Edwin Diaz. I think that is a pretty nice trio at the back end of the bullpen. Lugo eventually comes back to factor in. Familia has been inconsistent, but he's not giving up hard contact. It's the same old story with him. As long as he throws strikes, I think he'll be a piece you can kind of depend on. And from there, you just have to see who else can step up. But for now, you have a couple arms you can trust. You're getting great starting pitching. That's a good recipe for success moving forward. And right now, despite all the turmoil we've talked about, the Mets are in first place in the NL East. And that is the bottom line of this episode today. The Mets are in first. Can you complain? I do think it's funny when you talk about where Mets fans were the top of the eighth inning when the Phillies scored that run in game one to where they end the night, where they're on cloud nine because the Mets win two games in a row. It's such a bipolar reaction we get where when the Mets are winning, everyone is, you know, up to a 10. And then as soon as they hit a little skid, we go back to a 1. I try to live somewhere in the 5s. As I've done this podcast, it has taken a little bit of the emotion out of being a fan. Not all of it, but a little bit of it. And I think if you could do that, it makes these seasons a little less frustrating. But I know coming off the heels of 2020, I get that the fan base was quick to react in a negative way to what they were seeing in that first week. And I just hope that one sweep of a doubleheader does enough to kind of erase a lot of that. Now, again, big couple games ahead. This Mets team has an opportunity here against the Phillies to not only win this series, but put some distance between the only other team in the division that has a winning record right now. You know the Braves are on the way. The Marlins right now have 4 wins. The Nationals only have 2. This is your chance, though, to build an early lead in the NL East. Once you get the division lead, you kind of want to grab a hold of it and take it for a ride. Let's see if the Mets can do just that. Now, later on tonight, if you want to watch a little bit of the game with me, download the Locker Room app for your iOS devices. I'm going to go live at 7, and I will tweet out a link from my account at Finkelstein Ryan and also at Locked On Mets, so you can find it there. Join the room. Let's talk some Mets. I'm excited to meet some more of the listeners of this show. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow us wherever you get your podcasts. As I just said, you can find me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. You can follow the show at Locked On Mets, where we're doing a giveaway for a signed photo of Daryl Strawberry. That giveaway ends at 7 o'clock on Thursday, so you still have some time to enter for a chance to win. And if you're addicted to fantasy baseball, you now have a new resource that will give you an edge in your leagues and that is the Locked On Fantasy Baseball Podcast, a daily show hosted by veteran analyst Scott Cullen, who uses data and nearly two decades of experience to offer the strategies and waiver wire pickups that lead to league wins. Follow Locked On Fantasy Baseball on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.